we're playing the New Zealand rock band The Found on Take It From Us as our theme tune for our mental health radio program. They're a trio of Kiwi musicians, two of whom are mental health consumers. Let's listen to some more of their track, Long Gone. Welcome to Take It From Us, brought to you by Framework and the Like Minds, Like Mind campaign. I'm your host, Sheldon Brown, and Take It From Us is the voice of mental health on Planet FM and addresses reducing stigma and discrimination against people with lived experience of mental distress. Today on Take It From Us, we review the new Like Minds television advertisements entitled Be There, Stay Involved. The new series tackle the stigma and discrimination people with experience of mental illness still encounter from family and close friends. And here to discuss these new ads is Toyora Live Arts client, to James King, who's been on the show with Erwin Van Asbeck a few weeks ago. And James is a former News Talk ZB late night talk host. So, James, welcome to Take It From Us again.
G'day.
Let's start with your own experience of discrimination towards your own mental distress. I gather that you had to suffer some media exposure about your illness due to your sort of high profile in radio and the media. What impact did that have on you?
Well, it's firstly a surprise for people who perhaps didn't know and saw in the paper that that I had sort of fallen by the wayside, I guess. But I mean, one of the things being in the media is that you indulge in other people's lives all the time. I didn't really, it had never crossed my mind that I'd ever be newsworthy enough to warrant being in a paper. But it is like being outed. Not like a church vicar, but it is like being outed, in the community. And, obviously, the more people who know, and the perhaps some of those people aren't your best of friends, it gives people the opportunity to poke a bit of fun and give a bit of stick. As we saw, incidentally, with Phil Goff and Chris Carter, that whole situation around whether Chris Carter was nuts or not, the same kind of thing can happen from that.
And I mean, yeah, in terms of Chris Carter, you know, it didn't seem to take too long, did it, for that sort of conclusion to be drawn, despite the fact that there was no diagnosis or...
It's very easy, actually, for people to go to the lowest common denominator. And, you know, words like nuts and madness and insane are used arbitrarily nowadays, particularly in the media. You know, if you look at some of the you know, journalists, some of the presenters around, they will simply ask a question by saying, that's mad, isn't it? Or that's insane, isn't it? Or this is crazy, isn't it? This is a crazy decision. Which sort of, I mean, it's okay, but you keep reinforcing this idea that craziness or insanity or people who have mental disorders or whatever are somehow not rational enough to be full members, full operating, credible members of society. Mm. And you'd know as well as I do that particularly in the media, although these days it doesn't often seem this way, but in the media you've got to have a certain degree of credibility. If you can undermine someone's credibility, the best way to do it is to call them mad.
Yeah. And where were you when this publicity sort of broke in Wellington?
Well, I was in Wellington just coming to the end of producing. In fact, I had to stop producing on national radio because I got got sick. But that's where it kind of happened. And I suppose it was likely to, given it's a smaller community, I guess, a smaller area and not as big as Auckland, not much news going around and stuff like that.
So I mean, if I can just ask you, you know, you're probably in hospital. How did it affect you when you're in hospital? You're distressed, you're despairing, and here's publicity which questions your credibility.
Well, I'm happy to say that because I was in hospital, I really wasn't in a position to be compos mentis over it. It didn't really sink in to me. It was actually at the least of my worries, but it's what happens after that. It was what happens after you, when you get out of hospital and you become aware that people know and what have you, and people talk and gossip and this sort of thing. And that's where it starts to really impact on the individual. That's when it started to really impact on me. And what happens then is that you start thinking, well, everybody knows I'm nuts, so I won't be able to get a job. It's a small industry. Everyone gossips. They think I'm mad. They think I'm unreliable and, you know, irrational and all of these kinds of things. And so not that anybody would say it probably openly, that may very well have an impact on whether or not you're going to get hired. Mm. Certainly has an impact on your confidence.
So this theme, be there, stay involved, of these new television advertisements, I mean, did you find that there were people there for you that were staying involved, or did this, the result of this publicity be sort of accentuating your isolation?
I think it's very difficult for people to stay. In my case, you know, I started off in Wellington and then moved to Auckland. You know, the support I had was reasonably transient, but there were people who looked after me. A couple of friends took me into their home when I moved back to Auckland, and that was probably a year that I spent there, so they were very important. But because I was, when I was unwell, I was such a pain in the backside. You know, there comes a point where someone says, can we stand another day with this guy? And that hits you too.
How did that behaviour manifest itself, though, in your case?
Oh, you really want to know?
Well, you don't have to give us nuts and bolts, but, you know, did you realise that you were behaving in a way that was upsetting the people that were trying to extend a hand to you?
At the time I was doing it, no, I didn't. But, I mean, I remember going into a shop in Grey Lynn, and I had, for some reason, I don't know why, I'd put all these pins in my arm and had little cotton streamers coming off them. Whether I thought they were an antennae or a flaming, you know, windsock at the airport, I don't know. But I had all these, and I went into the shop, and the guy at the counter sort of looks at me, and wonders if I'm okay. And apparently I say, I'm fine, thank you very much. I'm just looking for a shirt or something or whatever I was there for. And so things like that, which are off-putting, they're a bit, you know, people will look at that and go, I don't want to hang around this guy. I might cross the street.
But when your support, your friends that were endeavouring to support you, when you exposed them to that sort of thing, how did that influence their support?
Well, I think it's just the same. They think you're mad. They think you're dangerous, I guess, in the sense that it's behaviour that's unpredictable. I mean, I think one of the things people like, being social creatures, we like predictability. We like people, we like to understand that people are going to do this, this and this. Anything outside of that is a really difficult thing to deal with. And I think it was difficult for my friends, and I think it put some pressure on their relationship, actually. And I guess they had to draw the line in the end.
I mean, in terms of your support, I understand that there's not a lot of family around, and so I guess friends are your resort, your support.
Yes, I mean, family does play a role. You know, I've got a close relationship with my my uncles and so on, and my my parents I know are there and that kind of thing. But yes, it would be you know, those who are closest geographically to me probably would be the ones who support me the most. And I think it's difficult for families because, you know, in my case, they've dealt with a person who's a particular type of individual, a particular character for X number of years, and then suddenly he goes off the rails, and that tension in the relationship goes up a couple of notches. So some of my family have said, you know, we're here if you want us, but don't want us. And other members of the family have been very strong in their support and very close. And it's not something that I don't criticise those elements of the family that have perhaps been a little standoffish. I don't criticise that because it is a horrendously difficult thing to deal with. It would be easy if I had a broken back or a sticky ticker or a sore knee. That would be easy. Dealing me when I'm 18 stone, 6 foot two, and not well is a whole different kettle of fish.
So how do you differentiate, I guess, between sort of a message which says, well, call on us, but don't call on us, and this issue of discrimination, you know, like, are they, did you feel that?
Well, you're almost dealing with two mutually exclusive camps. And I don't think people necessarily want to deal with people with mental illness, whether it doesn't matter how close they are, because it's just so fraught and fractured and tension filled. And sometimes in some cases, people with mental illness may have or may consider they've got that mental illness because of family. Or because of ex-partners, or because of children, or because of those close networks. We, you know, to some degree in these ads, we assume that in the perfect nuclear family world, you know, we'd have open discussions and we'd support each other and hug and, you know, light candles and sing kumbaya together in the fens and dales of the Waitakere Ranges. But it doesn't necessarily happen that way.
Well, certainly. I mean, I think the element of wellness and where you are on the barometer of wellness probably determines how people are influenced or behave towards you. And I think when we're very unwell, many of our closest people probably say, well, look, I've got to hand you over to the professionals. And whatever they say is necessary, then I'm going to go along with that.
Yes.
Which may be a cop-out, of course.
Well, it is. It's an understandable cop-out, though. Mm. I try to put myself in similar shoes. If I have to deal with someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's all difficult stuff to deal with, when I've got children of my own, or I've got a partner, or I've got a job, I've got a career, I might travel a lot, you know, it's very difficult to engage successfully. Particularly nowadays when society is so fractured anyway, we have very, very small families. I think there was a piece in the paper the other day saying that that the most common household now is a household without children. So you're dealing with two people in a household, where years ago you might have been dealing with eight people in a granddad, nana, great-grandma, cousins, aunties, uncles. So you had more of a resource pool, a human resource pool to deal with or to draw on.
Well, I interviewed actually a woman on Waiheke Island, and we rebroadcast this on Take It From Us. She was a ward of the state from the age of 3, and she joined a family of 16 with, mum and dad. So that was certainly the norm probably 30, 40 years ago. Mm.
And families have got smaller, so it's not surprising that the emphasis for families is let's get the medical profession to deal with it, because they've got the resources and the time and the dedicated services to be able to, you know, deal with the client, patient, service user.
That might, of course, mitigate against the person with the illness staying in the community, though.
Well, to some degree, I suppose it does, because you've got assessments and you might be taken for to one of the mental health wards or whatever. It certainly isn't conducive to an ongoing relationship. I mean, at some point, families have to say to themselves, do I want to establish a relationship? Do I want to be involved in the process? Or do I wash my hands with it entirely and have no chance of having a relationship with that person? Mm. I'd like to think that people would say, I want to have at least a chance of having a good, warm, loving, caring relationship than none at all, mm. and therefore get involved. But that's not necessarily the case.
Well, the theme, I think, of these ads that both James and I have looked at on CD over the last couple of days is support, and that's, I think, the message that comes through loud and clear. Let's listen to one of the audio tracks from one of the stars of the show, who in fact was a guest on Take It From Us just a month or so ago, and that's Johnny Angel.
No, it didn't change anything with my attitude towards Johnny. Johnny was still my best and close friend. I didn't see him any differently.
We used to play league and play touch and sports, and, you know, we're friends, but it's gone now. Now I can really rely and really understand that, you know, you are there for me, and you do believe in me.
And that's the way I actually approached it. Just unconditional acceptance, believing in the very best in them, letting them know, hey, we're friends not because we go through the good times, but also friends because we're going through the bad as well.
So that's one of the new television advertisements for Like Minds, which is running on all channels beginning August the 16th. In fact, those first ads ran during Shortland Street. There are going to be 12 advertisements in a documentary style, which are totally unscripted. And the conversations tell the stories of Alice, Makaroa and Johnny, and we've just heard Johnny's little story there and the support from his mate. So it's about the members of their support network, and they describe what that support really looked and felt like. Let's take a music track, and then we can come back to James's comments about these ads. And we're also going to talk to Aubrey Quinn down in Tauranga. And Aubrey, of course, was the star of the previous Like Minds television advertising campaign. So, James, would you like to introduce this first track?
Yes, the first track is called Wahine, and it's by Steve. It's from the Eclectic Collection CD put out by Toy Order Live Arts Trust. It's $10. You can actually pick it up by going to the Toy Order website, which
www.toyora.co.nz, is it, or .org.nz?
.co.nz, I believe. I'll right. have to check that out. And yes, as I say, this is you can order it through the website or give Toy Order a phone, a ring, and it'll only cost you $10. Now, by my reckoning, that's about 50 cents a track.
Let's have it.
Cheap.
There's a kiwi coming round the bend. Kia kaha let him in. There's a kiwi coming round the bend. Kia kaha let him in. Oh Lord, where's my wahine? There's a tuatara sitting on a rock. Honey, my friend. There's a tuatara sitting on a rock. Honey, my friend. Oh Lord, where's my wahine? There's wild rabbits on my farm. Oh yes, let them breed. There's wild rabbits on my farm. Oh yes, let them breed. There's a whale that is watching me. I will let exhausting. There's a possum sitting up my tree. Shine your light on him. There's a possum sitting up my tree. Shine your light on him. Oh Lord, where's my wahine? It's a sheepdog.
Yes, that was Steve with Wahine, a very rustic sounding song there. One you'd play around the campfire, I guess. You can get your hold of a CD with 21 tracks on it from Toy Order Live Arts Trust. You can go to their website, www.toyorder.org.nz. That's www.toyorder.org.nz. That'll cost you $10.
50 cents a track, you reckon?
Just under 50 cents a track, actually, because there are 21 tracks on this.
Well, we've also got Aubrey Quinn, who was the former star of the previous Like Minds television advertising campaign. Aubrey, how's it down in Tauranga today?
Well, we've got a lovely sunny day here, Sheldon. Hello, James. How are you doing?
G'day. I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, lovely day. Always sunny in the bay.
Yeah, surf's up?
Not today, no.
You've checked it out, though, have you?
That's the first thing I always do in the morning.
Right. Well, James has been talking a little bit about his own experience of being hospitalised and some of the support and that he was enjoyed, if you like, to some extent. But he's also been talking about some of the challenges for family and friends who are having to support people with mental illness. So, James, your thoughts about these ads? You've had a look at the first eight. What's your critique on them?
Well, I think the first ad we played here is just earlier with Johnny Angel was addressing the question of does mental illness change friendships? And I was interested to see, or to hear rather, that on the advert the clear idea was that no, it doesn't change friendships. I'd say or argue very strongly that in many cases it does inexorably change your friendships, because the whole social dynamics change. I mean, for example, when I was working in full flight with the career and what had you, I had a lot of media friends. I went out for dinner and I went, you know, go to the pictures, the theatre, all of this sort of stuff. Had a very active social life. Once you get hit and get taken out of the system, so to speak, and you find yourself then on the sickness or invalid's benefit, your money isn't as good as it used to be, the friends aren't inviting you out necessarily because you can't afford to go. All those friendships do change a little bit. And as I said before, if you're unwell, again, people probably not likely to invite you so much to, you know, some of the events they might be having. So I think it does change friendships very much. Yeah.
So I guess it depends very much where we are on our journey to recovery. And Aubrey, your thoughts about the ads? You've seen them on television?
Yes, that's right. And I really enjoyed them, actually. And I remember how excited both Michelle and I were when we first saw our ads come on, you know, and the work that we put into them. And I just imagined that, you know, what the guys were going when they first saw them as well, and I got really excited for them as well. And I think they really build on the ones, well, all of the campaigns seem to have this kind of really good approach, and I've really enjoyed them, actually, yeah. So does mental illness, you know, change friendships? Definitely it does. You know, people drop out of circulation, like James was saying, and then people struggle to kind of, you know, get back into that or know what to say. But I think, you know, the adverts that, you know, Johnny's involved with, and it's brilliant because it also shows that it can affect them positively as well.
Yeah, and I guess my own experience, you know, where I was taken out for a few months and I was reasonably, I guess, evident at a certain tennis club, you know, I've been able to go back there, total acceptance, back playing a good game of tennis and enjoying myself and enjoying the network there and the community and socialising. So I do think it does depend where we are on the old recovery continuum.
Of course, it also means, you know, when we talk about changing the nature of friendships and relationships, we don't necessarily mean that it changes the relationship for the worse. You know, some relationships, and I can think of a couple of relationships I have, that have actually increased in value and depth because I've experienced mental illness, and that has, and in some respects it's brought me closer to those people. So it's not necessarily that change for the negative, it can also be change for the positive.
Right. I imagine that the use of the word depth that James has used there, that your exposure to mental health and your involvement and participation in the ads, Aubrey, has given a great deal more depth, perhaps, to your life too.
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. It's that saying that with for every action, there's a reaction. And I think, you know, we knew that we wanted to try and make a difference in the lives of others, but, you know, our lives have been enhanced so much more the other way as well. You know, we've heard so many other people share their stories as a result of those. So many people continue to talk about, you know, the role that John Kirwan's played, of course, and that really has opened up a huge area for people to be able to, you know, talk about it and just be upfront. And that's from, you know, construction workers to labourers to all the way up to, you know, politicians as well. So, it's just been fantastic, really. And I think that depth, you gain greater understanding yourself, not only of your own journey, but also of other people's, and that is only a good thing.
What sort of responses have you had, I guess, now that the new ads are on and you've sort of dropped out of the limelight a little bit? I mean, have people come up to you and said, oh, we miss seeing you on television?
No, they haven't said they miss. I think most of the people that take notice of the ads have either had some sort of either experience themselves or know of someone in their family. So there's a relationship already with that kind of brand, I guess, as well, in some respects. But yeah, there have been some comments about, oh, the new ads are on TV. Yep, love those. And, and that's wonderful as well, because I think actually the content of them really, and in fact the way that they've been put together, it talks about belief. You know, that role of hope was there within our ads as well. And I think particularly in the girls' ads, she talks about the belief in recovery that she has. And I think that's absolutely wonderful too.
Yeah, and that support person that particular ad, which must be McEnroe's ad, I mean, what the support person says sort of really bolsters the person experiencing mental illness. Have you got any thought there, James?
I think I'm just trying to think of my own situation in dealing with people. I mean, I think one thing New Zealanders aren't very good at is we're not very good at saying those touchy-feely things that I think actually are increasingly important. You know, very often, well, very seldom would you go to a mate and say, look, I really value your, you know, friendship, and you know, you'd start trembling at the knees, wouldn't you? Next thing you know, you'll be wearing a pink tutu. But those sorts of things are really valuable, I reckon, in friendships. I think we don't give our true feelings away in terms of, particularly when it comes to affection.
Have you got a comment there, Aubrey?
Chuckling, you know, because that whole image of the, you know, the New Zealand man, and I think John Kirwan really started to break that down, you know, when he was talking about, you know, not telling people to, you know, just harden up. And I suppose going too far the other way is would be quite amusing as well. But yeah, just taking the time to sort of make those comments, and not on a superficial level, but actually really finding out what's going on for a person, and you know, what a great, you know, key message of, you know, being there, you know, and stay involved. that really, you know, cuts home, really.
It's more of this idea of there being a collegial attitude rather than, you know, this notion in modern society of constantly being in competition with someone. If you can take this collegial type approach where, you know, we're all friends together and we all share experiences and this kind of thing, I think you've got a much better chance of intellectual and emotional, as well as physical for that matter, well-being than you do otherwise.
You can tell that James has been in the media, you see, Aubrey. He's worked in a very competitive environment where you have to battle for stories and that sort of thing. And I've had that experience as well, and I think I know what he's talking about.
Mm. Yeah, well, he's very articulate, and that the key point, isn't it, about the friendships, really, and the value of them.
Yeah.
And when those ads first came on, I couldn't tell, actually, who was the person supposed to have had the experience. And what I loved about that was that it made me really watch it to kind of figure out, oh, what's going on here? And actually, they're just supporting each other naturally. And, you know, I really value that perspective too.
Yes, I think it's a good observation, Aubrey. I mean, one of the issues in dealing with the stigma attached to mental illness is that this idea, you know, it goes back to, surprisingly enough, Sheldon, this goes back to J. Edgar Hoover. You wouldn't have thought this, but it does. In the late 1940s, he put out a poster of it was a Stranger Danger poster, and on the poster you had this furtive criminal looking bloke with a striped jersey on, and he looked dangerous and he looked nasty, and you know, he didn't look very nice at all, and that became the standard idea of criminal, of a dangerous person in a child's life. You know, the same can apply to people with mental illness in this country. The standard impression is the thing that keeps the stigma going. Mm. And what Aubrey's proved and what these new set of ads prove is you can't apply those stereotypes, those standardized images that we get put through to us by Hollywood and the news media and so on, because Aubrey looks, dare I say it,
normal?
Close to. It's not until he speaks that you realise otherwise.
But he is a surfer, so he's got to be a good bloke.
But, you know, it's a good point from Aubrey, because you can't tell in these ads, in these current ads, you can't tell until the dialogue starts. You can't tell who's got the illness and who hasn't. I think the other thing is that they are actually very touching, in the sense that it's not gushy, it's not, it doesn't seem to be forced in any way. It's a very natural kind of conversation. They're responding to a series of questions. And it is, I mean, the ads are quite beautifully, the images are quite beautiful, in a respect. I'm starting to sound like a florist.
Well, I think you do well in PR, actually, James. I'm very surprised.
But they are good ads. What I was wondering before I looked at them was whether they'd get the penetration through the clutter of other ads on the on television and so on. And I think they probably will, because they're quieter, they're gentler ads, mm-hmm. they are more contemplative ads. So I think from that point of view, you know, you sandwich one of these ads in between a Noel Leeming's ad and a McDonald's ad, you'll notice it.
Mm. No, I think that's a brilliant observation, actually. It's just that I knew Johnny. I'd interviewed him on radio, and he comes along to some of our fitness and wellbeing programs at Youth Town. So I knew who the client was, I guess. But actually, in the case of the two girls, I was unsure. Let's play the script from the, or the audio from the girls' ad, and this is Makarawa.
Reminder of her, you know, uniqueness. It's how precious she is, beautiful person.
At that time, I never knew who I was. And so she would always say, oh, you had a really good personality. You were out there. You were friendly. You were kind. You're really unique. And just having her remind me, I was like, was I? Really? You're just saying that. And she said, no, you were. You were.
You are.
I am.
Yeah, it's just so important to sort of talk in the present, isn't it? I think there's a little message there. What do you think, Aubrey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they're so real, aren't they? I mean, that's so unaffected. It's quite beautiful. And the way they're shot, and when they're sandwiched, like you say, between the really loud adverts like Noel Leeming, whatever, you just get this break of silence and then this very contemplative picture of two people just chatting. It could be anywhere in New Zealand, anyone in New Zealand. And I think it's quite beautiful. So yeah, they're very real, and I think that's their appeal.
Yeah, totally unscripted. Yeah. Well, thank you, Aubrey. We really appreciate your participation again, and take it from us. And you can download the show, of course, on Planet Audio Take It From Us. So we very much appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you, Sheldon. And thank you, James.
Thanks,
Aubrey. It's a pleasure to talk with you both.
Great.
Take care.
Okay. Well, let's take another music break, and what have you got for us this time, James?
This is again from the Eclectic Collection put out by Toyota Live Arts Trust. It is Wolf Boy by Charlie.
You're the wolf boy upon my ceiling, continent of his own he walks, trying to make it southward bound to Incy Wincy's corner he stalks. May as well join the rain falling down the wall. Slip slide against a raincoat surface, heading for the door. Please, little man, please, little man. Come on, wolf boy, howl to the moon in the middle of the day. Surrounded by such convention, can't keep the wolves at bay. Don't win first prize, you'll find yourself in the pit. Then they'll measure you for size to see if the straitjacket fits. There's a wolf boy up on my ceiling, content of his own he was, trying to make it southward bound to NC Ranch's corner he stole. May as well join the rain falling down the wall. Slip slide against that raincoat surface, collective close the door. Wolf boy,
and a fade out of Wolf Boy. It comes off a CD, James, that is being promoted via Toyota.
That's right. Eclectic Collection is what it's called, and you can get that from Toyota from their website, www.toyota.org.nz, or you can phone them if you like on 360-4171.
Yeah, well, we've got some community notices here, and there is another opportunity for some mental health learning in a workshop called MH101. I've been along to this, and it's a very useful day. It's promoted as giving people the confidence to recognise, relate and respond to people experiencing mental illness. You can register for this MH101 on for the date, in fact, is the 15th of September. 8:30 to 4:30, and it's going to be at 8 Nugent Street in Grafton. And you can register by either phoning a Wellington number, actually, 0438163386, or you can email Yanetta, that's yanetta.hiko@blueprint.co.nz, and registrations are due in the next couple of days by the 2nd of September. So you've got a Mental Health Awareness Week message there, I think, James.
There, yes, I do, actually. It's 2010, Flourishing for Everybody. I think this is about feeling good in mind and body. This is something that calls on you to think about how your family, your friends and community might flourish. The idea behind this, by the looks of things, is the whole idea of flourishing is some kind of measure of mental health that has been developed within the last decade and can be used to determine the level of positive mental health in populations. Beyond that, I'm not quite sure what else it is there to do. But they have some key issues of interest. Everybody has the right to participate and flourish in their community. No one would disagree with that. Everybody can contribute towards creating a flourishing community, and everybody has the potential to feel good and function well. Something to be mindful of during Mental Health Week this year.
So that's the 4th to the 10th of October. And following that, on the 13th of October, you have the opportunity to join the mental health and addiction sector to celebrate innovation and excellence. We have been promoting this. This is going to be at the Papatoa Town Hall, 13th of October from 11 to 4. You have the chance at this event, which is packed with pioneering and innovative mental health and addictions projects, to hear about things like a pilot for placing mental health and addictions nurses in police stations, and also to hear about a services working together to provide a strengths-based recovery approach for young adults. Also coming up, we have the World Hearing Voices Day 2010, which I believe is September the 18th, and the local Hearing Voices Aotearoa is going to have a conference or forum on that day called Healthy Choices for Living with Voices. And on Tuesday, the September the 14th, we'll have the three speakers in the studio talking about natural ways to address hearing voices and perhaps reduce the voice hearing. So that's going to be our show on September the 14th. So let's take another of the audio tracks of Johnny Angel, and we'll play that to you now.
I hid from everyone, and I remember one time, but you probably won't remember, because you did come to visit me. Marlon came to visit me in my house, and my sister answered the door, and I just told my sister not to, you know, just to say I was away. So, but you know, when you came to visit me, that meant a lot to me, you know?
That was probably the main thing that I actually wanted to, just to let him know that I did care, and I did, you know, I'm still wanting to see him, And when he's ready, you know, I'll be there for him.
So that's another of the ads that are currently playing on television, and we have to thank Draft FCB, the advertising agency that provided those audios to Take It From Us. The ads are intended to leave people knowing what to do using skills to take the step forward and support someone experiencing mental illness. That, you know, to address this issue, that it may look tough, but it's easier than I think. While also acknowledging some of the challenges, and I think that James has identified some of those challenges, that support has a significant impact on recovery. Just in terms of that last one, support has a significant impact on recovery, James. How are you tracking on that one?
Yes, I'm tracking reasonably well. It's a day-by-day thing, I guess. But support obviously in terms of recovery is fundamentally important, because it can have a negative or a positive impact. But yeah, I think I'm tracking reasonably well.
And your involvement with Toyora, clearly you're there on a regular basis. What are you really sort of working towards there?
Well, I guess it's part of my recovery program, as it were, it is a place where I get my social, a lot of my social contact outside of family, And it's also a place where I get a little bit of intellectual stimulation and, you know, artistic stimulation, those kinds of things, which are, you know, really important to getting myself out of the illness and the negativity and so on.
Had you ever identified creativity as a pursuit when you were working in the media?
Well, I think the media is, it is, you know, one of the creative areas, I suppose you'd call it an almost part of the arts in a sense. But no, I mean, I was just thinking, you know, if someone had told me at school you'll be painting, you know, as an artist, you know, in years to come, I wouldn't have believed them at all, because it was just something not on my radar screen, although I worked in the arts industry before I began painting. Wouldn't have been something that I'd have considered.
So you had another career too, didn't you, in terms of, as you say, you'd worked in the arts. What was involved there?
I worked at a public art gallery, and my job there towards the end was as tiny liaison officer with the Fisher Gallery, where I sort of took on Māori art projects. So I worked in the art business for a couple of 3 years. Yeah.
So did that experience stimulate you to do any of your own personal painting creativity?
No, not at all. excuse me. That was what 15 something along 15 years ago. No, I didn't. In fact, the thing that pushed me into painting was being at in the mental health unit at Auckland Hospital for months on end. I had to do something to kind of stimulate me, or at least to do something to give me a reason to get out of the hospital bed. So I went down to their OT room and just started putting colours on bits of paper, and it's sort of gone from there.
Little do we know that those sort of first very tentative steps can lead on to something which can be quite absorbing.
Yes, and that's where encouragement is worthwhile too. If you've got people saying, gosh, you've got a bit of a talent here and so on like that, then a person can get some confidence from that, and, you know, there's that feel-good factor. Not only that you're doing it, but also that people are recognising it, and that's got to be good. That's got to, you know, build on that recovery process.
How about the success of actually selling some of your pieces, though, too?
Oh, it's always nice to sell them. I notice you still haven't put your hands in your pocket. I do offer reasonable terms, Sheldon.
Right.
But yes, it's nice. It's a nice form of recognition, yeah.
Yeah, well, you haven't really accepted my negotiations on that price, you see. That's the thing. You're pretty hard and fast on no sort of flexibility.
Well, not on price, but on terms. We can spread something over, I don't know, 18 months. You've got plenty of dough anyway. What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, it might look like it, but it's all,
He's got a Rolex on.
It's the florist. It's the florist look, you see. Yeah, well, let's take another track from this eclectic collection, which comes out of Toiora. What have you got for us, James?
We've got Superwoman by... I've got down here, it's Superwoman by Superwoman, but that's not the case. It's Superwoman by Levi.
Superwoman takes me a smile in the morning. Made me feel so good. She made me blush that morning. Made me feel so fine. I would give her everything if I thought I had something to give. I am a poor man, body and soul remain. I no longer know my own name. Viva, cha, cha, viva, Genevieve. Viva, cha, cha, viva, Genevieve. One love, just Sasha, Genevieve. Just live within you, just live within me. Superwoman made me feel love in the morning. Beautiful baby girl, so fine. She made me feel loved that morning. Now, regardless of time, nothing much matters no more. Let go of all of those shame. I lost them. Then I find my voice. Somewhere I'll find my own name. Viva Cha Cha, Viva Genevieve. One love, just Sasha, just Genevieve. Thanking you, Cha Cha, for Genevieve.
Now, one of the highlights, we're just going to fade out of that Superwoman track, and one of the highlights of Mental Health Awareness Week in Auckland anyway has been the October music gig. It's been at the King's Arms in previous years, but this year it's going to be at the Thirsty Dog in Kay Road. It's Friday, October the 1st, probably from 8 to late, I would think. So it's actually a lead-up to Mental Health Awareness Week, which starts from the 4th to the 10th. So that's the Thirsty Dog, the October music gig, and I'm told that there's going to be some class acts at the Thirsty Dog on October the 1st.
And there'll be a rare event on that night as well. I don't want to give too much away, but it will be a rare event. It'll be Sheldon will be shouting the first round for anybody who mentions his program.
Well, thank you for that, James. I can see we're going to have some fun.
I'm going to be there.
Good on you. Okay, well, I'll shout the first round, but that'll be at 3 p.m. So, okay, well, we're talking to James, who's getting a little cheeky in the studio here today. I don't know how we're going to rein him in, but
I should have worn a belt.
Yes. About the new Like Minds television campaign, and James, you've got some other observations there about these ads that are currently running on television.
As I said before, I think, you know, they will get some good penetration in the marketplace because they are a different style of advert to the sort of adverts that play. It's quieter, it's gentler, it's more self-effacing, I guess. Some of the concerns, though, and I understand this isn't the full complement of ads. I think you said earlier on that there are going to be 12, yeah. 12 ads. We've got 7 of them. There may be some criticism around whether, you know, they've got a broad enough representation of people used in the ads. I think at the moment we've got just 2 sets of ads covering 2 men and 2 women. I think, you know, it would be nice, it would be important, I think, to show that there is a broader scope, you know, older people, younger people, and other people from different kinds of backgrounds. The concern I have is that these ads may be preaching to the converted a little bit. What happens in terms of stigma around people who live in hostels and halfway houses and in state houses who are using soup kitchens and going to City Mission and those sorts of people? How are those people going to be catered for? How do these ads penetrate to that kind of person? It's very easy, when all of the people on these 2 ads and through the ad campaigns, they're very acceptable faces for trying to discuss and challenge notions of stigma. But we need to somehow find a way to access the people of the lower rungs, if you like, the more marginalised.
Well, in fact, that example of The person that I interviewed initially on Waiheke, who was a ward of the state at the age of three, she lived on the streets of Auckland for 5 years. She had 9 months on Murawai Beach, and yet, you know, she feels that her life, to some extent, has been blessed, and I think she feels very blessed that she's found Waiheke Island. Now, I mean, it's very true that she may not, in fact, see those ads because she lives on a little boat at Ostend and probably doesn't have television. So, yeah, I think that's a very valid point, isn't it? And perhaps we can do some research in the next week and bring some more information to our listeners about the, I guess, the racial diversity of people who will be involved in these ads. What, one of the points I would make is that I do think it's important to have ambassadors for mental health. You know, otherwise it tends to be a bit of a lose-lose situation if people don't present in a recovered state. I don't know how you feel about that.
Well, yes, I can understand that, but you've got to be able to do that whilst not alienating the rest of those people who are who have experiences of mental illness, because you've got to have that buy-in to give it some kind of legitimacy and credibility. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to have the people we see on these ads, but we don't get much depth of those people's backgrounds. So they may very well have been those people in halfway houses and hostels. We wouldn't know.
No.
And the other aspect of this that I think's problematic is, I don't think it gives enough information as to the 0800 number they have on the adverts. I'm not quite sure on what basis I would phone it, whether I'd phone that if I was in crisis, or whether I'd phone that to get through to a hospital, or whether I'd phone it to get a pamphlet. They don't actually say what you're going to ring that number for. And I went on the website, on the Like Minds website, and I found the number there, and that is actually an access number to Like Minds. The other aspect of this is, I mean, if you are going to go to the website, what are you going to go there and do? What are you going to go there and see?
We can bring some of those observations to our listeners next week. We can talk to the ad agency, we can talk to people in Like Minds and get some answers for our listeners. But I need to thank James for his participation today and for being a guest, and also for the time that he's put into critiquing these ads. So thank you, James, and we hope that you're going to be back in the studio with a regular slot each week, or just whatever suits you.
Thank you.
Good.